We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, what is going on, everybody? How you doing? Welcome to another edition of the future award-winning Talk of Buffalo podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Patrick Moran. You can find me on Twitter, at Pat Moran Tweets. Thank you very much for locking in just a couple of minutes. In fact, probably a minute and a half or so. I'm going to have Joe Yurden on today, and it's going to be an all Buffalo Sabres episode. Lots of stuff to talk about. Trades, of course, the draft, free agency coming, Jack Eichel. So today's all about hockey with Joe. Before I get into that, though, just want to give you a couple quick programming notes. This is going to be a very, very busy week here at Talk of Buffalo Podcast. Over the next 4 days, starting today, I'm going to drop episodes 4 straight days on you. So 4 straight days. Again, today, Joe Yurden, all about the Buffalo Sabres. Then on Wednesday, another edition or third edition of the Finer Wings Club, going to do Imperial Pizza. And if you're listening to this on Tuesday and you actually want to come by and check out the taping of the podcast, come say hello. I'm going to be with Marcel Louis Jacques from ESPN.com. He's confirmed to be with me, and I'm working on a second guest. I don't want to confirm that and say it yet because it's not quite confirmed, but Marcel's going to be with me for sure. Again, we're taping that Tuesday night, 8 p.m. or so at Imperial Pizza on Abbott Road in South Buffalo. We're going to try out their wings, talk about their place, talk Buffalo Bills, and that'll drop on Wednesday. Then on Thursday, the notorious, one of the Twitter's biggest trolls out there, my man Barry McCockiner. He's got almost 100,000 followers, and a lot of people know him for all of his crazy shenanigans and all the shitty pulls on Twitter, like I said, with his intentional trolls. But he's been on this show twice, and if you listen regularly, you also know he has actually some outstanding, legitimate football takes. Training camp's going on, so we'll talk a little Bills, but we'll talk about the NFL. We'll talk about his ongoing hatred for Tom Brady. Maybe we'll talk a little bit of hoops as well. So that's Thursday. And then, of course, again on Friday, it's Casual Friday, so Joe Yurden will be back with me again on Friday. Same format as always. We'll talk some Bills, some Sabres, just stuff going around in the city of Buffalo. And then, of course, we'll do another starting five draft, which, by the way, Joe has now beat me 5 straight weeks. I'm pretty embarrassed about that. But anyway, that is coming up over the next 4 days here, and I don't want to waste any time. Let's just get right into it. All Buffalo Sabres talk today with my man, Joe Yurden. All right, I'm joined right now by hockey writer, sports media personality, and as much as it pains me to admit this, at this point, the undisputed champion of our weekly Casual Friday starting five drafts, Joe Yurden. I said that almost grudgingly. Like I said your name almost kind of pissed off there, man. What's going on, buddy? How you doing?
I'll save my celebrations for Friday, but I'll just say thank you for bringing me on, even though I've kicked your ass.
Yeah, you buried me yet again. And yeah, we'll save that for Friday for sure. Come up with a new one. Maybe I'll break the losing streak, but I highly doubt it. This is going to be pretty much all Sabres talk. And I love doing Casual Friday with you because I feel like that's almost more of a Casual Friday, a casual conversation that we have throughout the show about sports and Buffalo. And then, of course, our weekly draft that we do for fun. Whereas this episode today on Tuesday is going to be pretty much straight down the line in Buffalo Sabres talk. But before that, I got to want to explain to you why So I know everything that happened, and we're going to talk about the two trades. I know Jack Eichel's still a Sabre as we tape this, at least late into Monday night. I know the first handful of draft picks, and I want to get your insight, of course, on all this stuff. And I did kind of follow along on Twitter, but I wasn't really locked in. And that's because we have this family thing like once every 2 years, and we didn't do it in 2019. It got pushed to 2020 because something came up. And then, of course, COVID. So it's actually been 4 years. It's a family event called Proc Stock, which is like the family's imitation of Woodstock. And the reason why it's called Proc Stock, long story short, I don't want to bore you with too many details, but one of our cousins, my wife's cousins, their name is Procknell. So Proc. And our aunt has a very large property. I mean, with tons of acres in the back, and every couple of years, like 100 people converge. They bring their RVs, their tents, and we just had Proc Stock. Anyway, long story short, I followed as best I could on Twitter this weekend, but I ain't going to lie to you, Joe. I was pretty much drunk all weekend. It started Friday around dinner time, and that rolled right into Sunday. Originally, I wanted to hook up with you on Sunday night and tape something for Monday, but I decided, well, two parts. A, I wanted to give another day with the Sabres to see something happen with Jack Eichel because that's such a big story. And also, I'm not going to lie to you, man. I was mentally as well as physically hurting a little bit all day and night Sunday. Like, I didn't get out of bed once we got home to 3 or 4 o'clock. So it was one of those weekends. What are you going to do?
You know, listen, we've had those. We've all had those weekends where it's, you're just like, yeah, no, I'm turning everything off. I'm not going to care about anything, and I'm just going to have a good time. And you know what? Yeah, Monday's always for paying for it. That's why I always kind of get a laugh at the, you know, the whole football season Victory Monday thing, because usually if you've been busy watching football all day Sunday, it's, you know, if your team doesn't win, it's more of a hangover. But if your team does win, it's an even longer hangover, because I assume there's victory drinks involved.
I got to ask you, because you said this, as a sports fan, forget about the media part. I know you've covered the Sabres, you cover hockey, but even forget that, or forget just hockey period. We even stick it with football. When you win, when your team wins, and you're not just a fan of Buffalo teams, you're a Detroit sports fan. We've talked about that multiple times, like obviously mainly the Lions. When your team wins, like, do you want to consume everything the next day about your team? Whereas when they lose, you kind of want to forget it ever happened. And like, you don't listen to radio, and you're trying to, which is kind of, you know, this is kind of crazy for us to say, I'm a podcaster, you're a sports writer, to kind of admit it. But as a fan, you tend to stay away from stories and sports talk and TV shows more when your team's playing shitty and they lose for that following week.
I don't know. Some teams make it easier than others to ignore them when they're bad, or, you know, if they're good. Like, it depends on the team too. Like, if the Lions were good, I'd be terrified to read anything good about them, just because I'd be like, the floor is going to fall out at some point. I don't want to get hyped up. But then when they're bad, like, people ignore them when they're bad for the most part, unless they're going over, then it's, you know, then it's unavoidable. But, or they have, you know, a string of embarrassing losses, which usually happens every year, where they, you know, something stupid happens and they lose. But for a team like that, it's easy to avoid. But then again, you know, like with the Yankees, anytime that they're losing, it's a huge story. And anytime that they're winning, it's a huge story. So you can't escape it. So, like, you know, they've had five awful, like, gut punch losses in the last like 3 weeks, it seems like. And, you know, this latest one against, they had two against Boston in this past series. So it's like, yeah, you know, great, cool. Like, they're not a good team this year, and, you know, they've been snake bitten by everything possible. So, but like, it's all a huge story. It's all blown out of whack. But like, if they win, like the Yankees win the World Series, probably have a beer, you know, like, toast a beer at my old man, probably do that. But like, if the Lions won the Super Bowl, I don't know how I'd react. I'd be comatose for the entirety of the playoffs, because I wouldn't understand what was going on, and I would be a wreck. I would be an exhausted wreck at the end of the game. I'd be too stunned to celebrate. But the one time I did go nutty celebrating was when Oswego won the national championship in Division III hockey in 2007. And for whatever reason, the CBS Sports Network had the game on their cable channel. So I was able to watch it, because the game was in Superior, Wisconsin. So it's not like I could drive there. Like, once every 5 years, it goes out west for the championship. And that was the 1 year it was out west, because otherwise I'd drive. I wouldn't care where it was out east. I'd just go watch. But this time they were out west, so I wasn't able to go. So watching it on TV, and it was an overtime game. They're playing against Middlebury. Middlebury, who's won hundreds of, you know, they won a bunch of times. And they ended up beating Middlebury in overtime with just a sick goal. And I like got up, started shouting, started running around, ran outside, did a backflip. I've never done a backflip in my life. I did a backflip that day into a snowbank in front of my folks' house. And I come back inside, and I had already missed four phone calls. I was outside for maybe 2 minutes, and it was four phone calls I missed. And you know, I had to call everyone back. And my buddy Kevin, who also did play by play at Oswego for a bit, he picks up the phone, and we're just both going, ah, just screaming in the phone, just like, holy shit. But yeah, that's like the one time where I really let it out. But like, again, I was too exhausted to like sit back and be like, let's pound a bunch of beers. Like, I couldn't do it. I was just like, oh, thank God it's over. Oh, thank God they won. It was just like one of those kinds of things.
Well, when it comes to the Sabres, I don't think we're going to need to worry about any celebratory reactions, at least anytime soon. I'll say this. I had my own personal pretty wild weekend, and it was a semi wild weekend for the Sabres. I really don't think anything that happened was completely shocking. Maybe other than the fact that as we tape this, maybe Jack Eichel is still a Buffalo Sabre at this moment. And we'll get into him in a few minutes. But the two guys that did get traded, I mean, we've talked about it. You've talked about it on this show for weeks now. Very expected. You expected both to happen. I guess it goes down to where they went to and what they got that maybe is a little bit surprising. So again, educate me a little bit here. Let's start Rasmus Ristolainen. So he goes to Philly, and they get a first, the Sabres I'm talking about. They get a first next year, a second in 2023, and Brandon Hague. I want to get your thoughts on the trade. I want to get your thoughts on the haul. It seems to me, based on, again, my own personal thoughts, maybe some conversations that I've had with people, it seems that they got a little bit more than I anticipated for Rasmus. So, you know, what's your take about that?
Well, I think the biggest take on it is that what they got in return for him is pretty stunning, because I think the opinion of him around here, for the most part, was pretty low. You know, I mean, you can't be the face of a team that's for the last 7-8 years now, and you know, for the better part, 7 years, and not be thought of as just a giant loser who couldn't get it done, who couldn't help the team get over the hump. You know, no matter how many, you know, good things they might have done, you know, he was just looked at as like, man, this, you know, he's the, for lack of a better term, he's the face of all the losing the past few years, because his stats have partially reflected that. I mean, everybody points to his plus minus being, you know, minus, God, what is it, like minus 160 or something like that? It's something terrible. And
isn't it like the worst in the NHL over a certain period of time? Something, if it's not the worst, it's very close to it.
Yeah. I think for his time that he's been in the league, he's got the lowest plus minus of all of them. And there was also a metric, and I should have this stuff like favorited now, but like, I just was like, forget it, whatever. But there was a metric that, where, you know, for defensemen in the NHL, the past, like, what, 1, 2, 3 seasons, whatever it was, there was 68 of them, and it ranked where they, you know, how they ranked in each metric. And he was last in every single one of them, which, I mean, you know, listen, it's how it is when you play for a team that's finished last in the league, what, three, four times now since 2014. That's going to happen. So, like,
how much is that on the system, Joe? Like, how much of that is the system versus how much of it is directly the player itself? I mean, we'll probably start to find that out when he goes to Philly now with a new system and new teammates. But is there any part of his production or lack of production, I should say, in his metrics that are bad? Is that, you know, can you look at this organization during his time here in the coaching staff and just the players, the talent around him? Is it the system that kind of made him look bad, or is it more just, you know, he's just was an underachieving player that just frankly wasn't very good and never lived up to his expectation that we all had for him?
Well, I look at it this way. His first season, he played half in Rochester, half in Buffalo. And I'm trying to like quickly look back at his game charts just to make sure I get which coaches he played for correct. I'm pretty sure it was all Ted Nolan. I'm almost positive of that. But if he played for Ron Ralston at all in that, you know, brief window in 2013-14, that alone would be you know, that's one coach to add to the fire. But he played for, he starts his career with Ron Ralston. Ralston gets fired. Then he moves on and plays for Ted Nolan. And then after that, it's, you know, they fire Ted Nolan after the tank season. They hire Dan Bylsma. He plays for Bylsma. He plays for Phil Housley. He plays for Ralph Kruger. And now, you know, he's played for Don Granato. Like, and that's in seven seasons.
Yeah.
That's nuts. Like, that's what, five coaches in seven seasons he's played, you know, parts of or full seasons with. And that's, you know, it's five different coaches. It's five different systems. It's five different ways of doing things. And it's five, you know, five ways to go about figuring out how you play hockey. And when you've got a defense and a defenseman, especially, there's so many, you know, and being, what was he? He was 19 in the 13-14 season. Like, you can't just have guys like that learning in these kinds of situations where every other year they've got a new coach. And for a defenseman, especially, like, they've got to learn, like, they've got to get accustomed to playing in the NHL. They've got all these different things that they've got to get figured out as time goes on, and having different coaches each, you know, all these times really hurts. And that's why I'd be terrified for Dahlin, because he's what, three seasons in and he's had three coaches. Man, that sucks. Like, that's really bad. And it's, you know, but I think it's, you can't hang, you can put some blame on the player because the player's got to play the game. But in his case, he's not been put in a situation where he can be successful. You know, they, you know, every time they've built up the team around these players, they've done it wrong. You know, if, you know, they, when they fired Bylsma, I think that was it was somewhat of a surprise, but considering how the locker room felt about him, it wasn't. When they let go of Housley, I think there was a lot of debate that, you know, you're letting him go too soon. But it certainly seemed that after that second season, yeah, probably he wasn't cut out for it, but also how much of that is also on the team or is on management. And, you know, certainly Kruger, you know, we don't have to say anything else about Ralph Kruger. That just went very poorly. But now you're looking at a possibility of him playing under his fifth, sixth head coach now with Granato and saying, like, well, eventually he's going to have to snap out of it. Well, he's already built up a record of, you know, 7.5 seasons and it hasn't happened. And, you know, whether that's his fault or management or coaching or all of it together, that's on them. And at some point you just have to say, listen, we got to move on. And, you know, I think for a lot of us that point was 2 years ago. But the fact that they did it now makes a ton of sense. And I think the thought is that considering the resume he built up, there was no way you were going to get a first round pick for him. There's no way you're going to get multiple pieces for him. Cause you're thinking, like, if they can get a third, they'll be lucky. But, you know, Pierre LeBrun talks about how there are multiple teams ready to give up a first round pick for him. And that raised the price for Philly so that they give up a first, they give up a 2023 second round pick. You know, I Robert Hogg, I don't, you know, it's no slight on him, but that was just to help, you know, balance some money out. But the fact that you're getting a first and a second round pick for Ristolainen, given his resume, is shocking. That's utterly stunning considering what you lay forth on the table with his numbers, with his metrics, the advanced stats, with everything. It's a shock.
When it comes to Rasmus, and obviously I don't know hockey nearly to the extent that you do, but with my eyes at least, it seemed early this past season when he played with Jake McCabe, he was playing some of the best hockey that I've ever seen Rasmus Ristolainen play. And then, of course, McCabe suffered the major knee injury. More on that in a minute. But it kind of went, you know, the season, like it, most seasons have for him, into the shitter. And by the way, briefly, like Robert Hogg, tell me a little bit about him. I mean, I just called him Brandon about 2.5 minutes ago, so that tells you how much I really know about the player. But I know that this trade was about the picks. But does the player bring any value to this team going forward, like for the next one or two seasons? I don't know anything about this player at all.
He's a bit of a tough guy. You know, he's a more of a physical defenseman. Not a ton of puck carrying skill there, but he's not a goon level guy either. But like, he's not afraid to get physical if he has to. We saw some of that in the last couple of years with the Flyers. He doesn't turn the excitement meter up for me. In an ideal situation, he's your, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh defenseman, I think. I think that's the best way to break it down for him. But I think in Buffalo, he, you know, if things break down, the way that they're supposed to. He's probably going to get a fair amount of minutes. He's a lefty. You know, he's Swedish, so you know that it's a lot of reasons to be like, all right, hey, maybe we got something here. But you know, listen, he's had 200 almost 240 games, 47 points, and even still, the penalty minutes, not a lot of them, which is fine. But you know, some of the lasting impressions I've seen of him, you know, the last couple of years was him just getting his anger up at some guys and getting pushy. But I mean, you know, his best season was what, 18-19? He had 20 points. He was a -3. Like, yeah, it's fine. You know, the advanced stats are, you know, nothing great, nothing good either. Like, he's a career 42 Corsi guy. That's not good. And the Flyers were good for a few of those years. So I'm not getting excited about him. But again, the salary balance things out. And that's part of the price of doing business when you're sending a guy with a $5 million contract to a team that's having that's tight against the cap.
You know, it's worth noting, too, we had discussions on this podcast over the last couple of weeks about the Sabres protected list going into the expansion draft. And I was kind of the mindset that I really wanted Will Borgen to remain in Buffalo. And there were a lot of people that said maybe Rasmus Ristolainen should have been exposed. You vehemently were against that. And I remember us talking about, well, okay, well, if the return that they get for Rasmus is better than what they got for losing Borgen, then it would turn out to be the right move. So based on what they got, a player, a serviceable, semi-serviceable player, and two high draft picks, you got to kind of consider this, for Kevin Adams, a win to the way this worked out. Of course, you didn't want to lose Will Borgen. Maybe it would have been nice if they could have worked out a little something to have them take Colin Miller or something. But all things considered, with Ristolainen and how many people were saying that he should have been exposed, I kind of feel like this worked out well.
Yeah, no, this is of the trades that Adams has made here in his short time. This is by far his best one. You know, that they're able to
remind the West Side, baby.
West Side motorcycle races.
There it goes.
But he turns the first round pick this year into Isaac Rosen. You know, he's a, you know, Swedish scorer, winger. Like, they drafted about 7 wingers, it seems, this year. So it'll be interesting to see him kind of grow up. He's likely to be on the world junior team for Sweden this year. That'll be fun to watch. I think a handful of some of the guys that got later in the draft are also going to be candidates for that. But I mean, like, turning that pick into a player that you had your eyes on is great. I think the thought was after they finished that trade was that maybe they're going to use that number 14 pick to maybe move up a little higher in the draft, you know, maybe make that part of a potential Eichel deal. Whatever it was, it didn't materialize. So Isaac Rosen's a nice pick. You lose Ristolainen, which honestly is, and I hate saying this because I like the guy, it's addition by subtraction, because all the negative aspects of his game are now eliminated from what has kind of helped the team fall behind. So those negative effects, especially for a guy that plays 20 plus minutes a night, are gone. And now, you have to fill the minutes part up with some other guys. You know, Joki Haru is going to be one of them. He's going to get a big bump in minutes. You know, Miller's going to see more minutes too. So, you know, I can't see those guys falling back so much that it now equals out, so that you have Ristolainen effects on them. But I guess we'll see how it works out with some of those guys getting more attention against top lines.
You mentioned Rasmus being a good guy, and it got me thinking to a man and to a woman in the media. I've heard a lot of that in the last couple of days since he got traded. You've talked about it on this show several times. You tweeted about it. Lance and Mike from the Buffalo News, John from the Athletic, and, you know, Paul, some other guys out there who covered the Sabres. They were, to a man, they would say that Ristolainen was a good guy off the ice and a stand-up guy, and one of at times in, you know, in an era of sports where there's just so many locker room divas and people who just don't take accountability, he was one of those guys who would, for the most part, stand up in front of a microphone and you know, just kind of tell it how it was. And I'm sure as a sports writer and somebody who covers hockey and talks to players and stuff, I'm sure that's something you appreciated. Not the same token, and you guys have also said this as well. I mean, that's great, but at some point you got to be able to produce on the ice. You could be a great soundboy off the ice, but if you keep, if you're inept on the ice, that kind of washes that out. But anyway, just for you to reiterate what you've said before, he was a good guy.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned the accountability part. His role was a little funny because he was a guy who, After games, he ran right to the shower. He was first guy into the shower. And if you needed to talk to him, you had to let PR know, like, almost before the game was over, like, hey, we want to talk to Rasmus. Because if he didn't, he was going to be showered, dressed, and gone to go back to his apartment, which, you know, I mean, that can be seen as a negative thing, but it's really not. Everybody's got their own routines and stuff. And, like, he wasn't a guy that just was going to hang out in the locker room. He never was, you know, from the time he was a kid, you know, from a rookie until now. Like, some guys are cool with hanging out. Other guys just, they're not comfortable with it. But whenever you needed a straight answer, like if you got tired of hearing different, you know, types of team speak stuff from other players, and it's not, the players are raised and coached on different ways to be. Rasmus didn't do that. Like, he did not pull punches, especially, you know, in reference to his own game, in reference to how the team was playing and to how he felt. And I think when you have those kinds of things happen, you end up appreciating that guy more for being able to speak that way. As opposed to guys that are just kind of like, well, you know, we got to get pucks in deep. We got to work harder. We got to do this, that, the other thing. Like, you get a guy like Risto that just has kind of fun with it and just rolls. It's a gift, but like one that you don't take for granted because you don't get it that often.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we talk about Sam Reinhart and Jack Eichel, I should have brought this up earlier. I remember very well locker room cleanup day. It was on Zoom. You guys, you know, nobody was actually in the locker rooms. When I go back to those, what I guess I would call them ill-fated pressers now with some of these players, and they did it over the course of 2 days. I remember Jack spoke on day one, and I think Rasmus, and then maybe Reinhart on day two. I can't remember. But obviously, they all spoke, and it was, I think now, in hindsight, the writing was literally on the wall. I mean, there was a lot of speculation right away, of course. But I think, do you think that like, sealed the deal right there? Like, there was no doubt that this was what it was going to come down to based on what you heard, like, right after the season when those guys spoke, and it was pretty obvious that none of them were enthusiastic about the potential of returning to Buffalo for another season.
I think the whole season kind of made that happen, the way things went. You lose 18 games, you fire a coach, you do all this other bad stuff. I think that more or less sealed the fate. Just that the end of the year press conference stuff just kind of lets it get out in the air. And certainly, like, you know, in Ristolainen's case, I think the last 3 years he's basically said, like, hey, you know, if they want to trade me, they can do that. That's pretty cool. I'd be okay with that. But in Reinhart and Eichel's cases, that's never been the case before. And you could see it. I mean, you could see it on their face. You could hear it in how they spoke. You know, certainly Jack was frustrated about a lot of stuff. And even Sam just seemed worn out by everything. And, you know, it's for him where, you know, he was the guy that was facing front of it all season long and dealing with the questions, dealing with all the attention. That's a lot harder. And, you know, he's not really a guy who's been one to seek that spotlight. I don't know if that's me painting a pretty picture out of it. But like, he's never a guy that just wants to, you know, kind of air it out. Whereas Jack has no qualms in doing that if he has to. Like, he'll say what he needs to say if it's the right time. And obviously there was other things going on with Jack, but you're right. This was anybody who watched all that stuff unfold. And those three guys did go the first day because they had all the young guys, the new generation go the second day to slap a happy face on things. But certainly with those guys, like, they were over it. They were done with it. They've been here for 5, 6, 7 years, you know, 8 years in Risto's case. Like, they're done with it. Like, it's over. They're sick of the losing. They're sick of all this other crap. Like, if you walked away from watching that and thought, I don't know, maybe they could get back together next year and maybe get things figured out and started down a better road, you're fooling yourself, because they, like, those three guys were checked out.
They were. And I'll tell you, going into those pressers, and I remember this very well. I remember telling myself, okay, this was a different team with Kruger than it was with Granato. Sam Reinhart, in the absence of Jack Eichel, showed that he is a legitimate potential first line center, and at worst, certainly a really good number two, at worst. Okay, mm-hmm. So you take him and these young guys who played well under Granato. So you got Reinhart, you got these young guys, and you got your captain coming back and your best player, obviously, in Jack Eichel next year. And again, this is all going before they started talking right after the season. I'm like, this is something to build on. You got the young guys playing well. Reinhart really stepped his game up, and you're going to have your best player, Jack Eichel, coming back. Mm-hmm. But by the time that press conference, those Zoom calls were over, whatever, over the course of those 2 days, that was literally the first time where I said to myself, yeah, Jack's gone. Yeah, Sam's mm-hmm. gone. Rasmus, kind of like most people, has been whatever. We hear it every year. Yeah. Feels like it's never going to happen. But I remember that. It was just that feeling that everything changed with that Zoom presser, or at least it did for me anyway. Now with Sam Reinhart, well, with Rasmus, I talked about how I feel and you feel, most people feel, that the Sabres kind of got more than maybe what we initially expected them to fetch for him. Conversely, mm-hmm. with Sam Reinhart, it seems, and this is, again, I want to get your take on this and your thoughts on this. So he goes to Florida for a goalie, Devon Levi, and a first-round pick next year. So I want your thoughts on that. Are you surprised that there's a goalie involved that's a prospect as opposed to maybe somebody who's more established in the league? Because, again, Sam Reinhart showed he is a legit top six forward in this league this year. And even mm-hmm. the first-round pick next year is actually lottery protected. So if it's a top-10 pick by some chance, then it gets pushed back a year. It kind of feels to me, on the surface anyway, based on conversations I've had with you or just listening to other people, that they didn't quite get what they thought they were going to get for Sam. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it certainly seemed that I think Elliot Friedman had mentioned it on the 31 Thoughts podcast, soon to be 32 Thoughts, I'm sure. But he had mentioned it on there that the pick was more important to Kevin Adams than the player was. And that seems pretty clear. Because I think if the player was more important, you're aiming a little bit higher on the prospect level. Now, that said, Devon Levi is not chop liver here. Like, this kid played incredible for Canada in World Juniors
right
this past year. Like, you know, the fact that he's a seventh round pick is people going like, well, geez, this is some bum, whatever, get him out of here. Listen, goalies, people always say it, but goalies are voodoo, man. If you can figure out a great goalie prospect from when they're 18 and how they're going to play when they're 23, 24, I want you to pick out the lottery numbers for me, please, because you're a freaking genius. So we don't know what Levi's going to be. What we do know about Levi is that he's not very big. He's a bit smaller for a goalie size, which doesn't usually bode well for current NHL standards. I mean, all the goalies now are like 6'4", 6'5", 6'6". But he's not that big. But what he showed at World Juniors was that he's quick and he can get around the crease. He can make saves. He can do that, which is great. He's also a college goalie. He's at Northeastern. If I'm the Sabres, I'm letting him finish his time out at Northeastern and then signing him. Like, I'm not trying to hurry him out. Like, Eric Portillo, if Michigan wins the national title this year and he's their starting goalie, get him out. Get him out, get him in a camp, and let's get it going. Like, get that stuff figured out, because he was great at the USHL. He got a good taste of action last year, and now he's probably going to be the number one at Michigan. So, but in Levi's case, that's not his trajectory. And you know, if you can give him as much time as possible to get things figured out, great, do it. And they do have that. So they can get away with it. and let them roll. But the first round pick, I know the lottery protection, I think it's meaningless, honestly. That's more Florida, you know, protecting their ass from having a total implosion this year. Panthers are going to be good. You know, they could win the division. They're that good. I you know, on paper, you know, again, things can always get weird. They always seem to get weird for Florida for whatever reasons, but they were damn good last year. They're going to be really good again this year, especially with the old division format coming back. Like, they're going to get the load up against the Sabres, the Red Wings, and the Senators again. They don't have to, you know, they're going to have to deal with the Lightning a bunch, you know, Boston, you know, Toronto, all them, but they're going to be right up there with them. And if they miss the playoffs, that's a shock. I think I'm saying that right now. It's going to be a shock if they miss the playoffs, because they seem to be a team that's going to make it, and they're going to do well. Now, you know, whether that happens or not, we'll see. They're going to have questions in goal because Bobrovsky's been terrible since he's gone down there, but we'll see. But if they end up in the lottery, all right, the first round pick slides to 23, which, not a bad thing. Like, there's going to be some really elite talent in 2023 as well as 2022. Sabres just want to get as many firsts as possible. If you can walk away with, you know, once they get Eichel Dell, if they can get another 2022 first, you got three in that draft next year, you're sitting really good. And one of those picks is going to be a top five pick at least, you know, based on what the Sabres are looking like they're going to be next year, you're probably looking at definitely top 10, maybe top five.
Only top five, because they can actually fall down a couple of spots in the lottery. Because I was going to say, otherwise, I'd consider them a top three lock. Maybe I'm answering my own question by just what I explained a couple minutes ago. But with this haul, with the return they got, it almost feels to me, from a hockey standpoint only, maybe they would have just been better off holding on to Sam Reinhart and trading him near the deadline. I feel like maybe they could have gotten more. Maybe not, though. I mean, who knows? Maybe gets hurt. I mean, things could happen. Or is it because, again, based on what we heard and just the sentiment, that it was kind of obvious, dude didn't want to be here. And Kevin Adams, in a couple press conferences over this last few months, has pretty much said, we want guys who want to be here. Sam Reinhart wasn't that guy. So it was like, all right, we're getting rid of this guy. Maybe even if we could have gotten more at the deadline, which I don't know, maybe they couldn't have gotten more. I'm just a little, the first round pick is good. I just thought that maybe they would have done a little bit better for a guy who scored 25 goals last year. Because I guess, and you kind of explained this already, the goalie, like, where does he slot into this organizationally on the depth chart? Because, I mean, they got UPL, you mentioned Portillo, they got the hope, they're hopeful to bring back Olmark. I mean, you're kind of talking like a long time before this guy might see between the nets in Buffalo, if at all. It's just, it kind of feels a little underwhelming to me personally. Maybe it's just me. But if this haul feels a little bit underwhelming to me, whereas Ristolainen, like I said, that package was a little bit more than I expected.
Yeah, but I think you kind of spelled it out what the issue is with the goaltending. They bring Olmark back. You've got Lukanen, you've got Portillo, you've got nobody else. They literally have no other drafted, you know, brought up goalies of their own behind Portillo, and you know that's the fault of drafting. Like you know. Scout your goalies a little bit better, maybe get one every couple of years, or grab one when you see that they're going to be really good. But that's kind of the fault on how the drafting goes, because if you've got that few goalies in your system, you ain't doing things right. You know, and they, you know, I mean, they had Jonas Johansson, they traded him last year. Allmark may or may not come back. I've heard he's likely to come back on a multi-year deal. You know, I think I saw Chad DeMonesis say something around the $5 million mark. But like, if you're Olmark, aren't you waiting until free agent day to say like, oh, let's see what else is out there? Because there's probably going to be a lot out there for him, because there's a lot of teams that are going to be needing goaltending. So if I'm him, I'm waiting to see who calls. And then if not, if you know you got to deal with Buffalo waiting for you, okay, you're okay with that. But you have to have more goalies in the pipeline. You need to have guys, because if you can get a goalie that comes up through your system and he does really well, you've got him for cheap. You've got him, you know, you've got control of him until he's, you know, 27, 28. That's what you want, because you don't want to be paying, you don't want to be dropping $8, $9 million a year on a goalie, because year to year, that's going to change. I mean, we've seen it so many, and I mentioned Bobrovsky before, like Florida signed him to a gigantic contract and he's been crap. He's been crap there for like 2 or 3 years now. So, you have to be really careful with how you spend that money, because the thing lately has been, be as cheap as you can with goaltending as long as it's good, because you don't know who's going to be good from year to year. And that's 100% true. Carter Hart, I thought, was going to be, you know, King Vezina for the next 10 years with Philly. He had a really rough year last year. Tristan Jarry seemed to be like he was going to be the king of Pittsburgh for a while. He was sketchy last year. So everything changes year to year, and it all depends on how teams play together. But you just need to have the guys in your system to be able to work with them, to be able to find out what they're about and be able to see if they're going to be worth a damn. Because right now, even still, we don't know if UPL is going to be, if he's going to be the guy. We've been talking about him possibly being the guy for a while, but we still don't know. And that's the real tough part with goaltending.
Of the three guys, well, two have already been traded. One, obviously, at some point is going to be. Reinhart was the one that I wanted to keep the most. You said it perfectly. I think Rasmus at this point, given everything, was more addition by subtraction. Jack, we're going to talk about him in a second. But I really like Sam Reinhart, the player. And quite frankly, not many, but there are a couple people in the media, quite frankly, that I feel like treated him shitty. And I'm not saying that that's the reason. Sam Reinhart's a professional, and I'm sure it comes down to a lot of other things beyond just what the media think of him or a couple of people. But there's no doubt in my mind, man. And I don't need to name names, man. People figure the shit out what I'm saying. There are some people in the media that really kind of dumped on this guy a lot more than he deserved, because I thought he was a steady player. I thought he was constantly being moved around and put in bad situations. But even that, I feel like he was flourishing, and he was just playing his best hockey this year, again, without Jack, too. So it wasn't even like Jack was carrying him. I just feel like, to a large extent, with the media and maybe some fans, but more in the media, because, you know, it's easy to blame the media for this and that and the fan, blah, blah, whatever. But I actually think the fans like Reinhart. I think it was more just some people in the media just didn't give this guy the respect he deserved.
Yeah. And, you know, for my own experiences with him, I've had zero problem with him ever. You know, I mean, and not to get too much like to see how the sausage is made when it comes to like trying to get stories done or whatnot. But like, if you're pinning all your hopes on getting one story done with one guy, and, you know, depending on the day, if you catch a guy in a bad mood or something, like if you're under the wire, you're under the deadline, you got to get something with this guy no matter what. And if he ain't feeling it that day and he gives you answers you're not looking for, he's just short with you, or like, you know, he's got other things he's got to get to, like whatever the deal is, that's a you problem. That's not his problem, because his problem, you know, his thing is he's, you know, he practices, he plays, he's there. If you ask for him, he's there. And then, you know, it's on you to ask either the right questions or just be more prepared for it. And if you get off on a bad foot with him, it's probably your own fault. Like, you know, some players just don't like people out of hand because whatever reason, but sometimes you just get a feeling from a guy. We've all had this happen. Like, I'm not going to say like this is, you know, on these people in particular. We've had it happen where you get into a situation where you see somebody and just out of hand without knowing them, just seeing them and see the way they act, you go, oh, fuck that guy. Like, no, right. Like, to hell with him. I don't like them. You have no reason for it. It's unfounded. You just look at him or you hear him. You just go, oh, to hell with that guy. And I want to say that that's probably what happened with Sam. And sometimes the way he's acted in scrums is, you know, maybe not what you're looking for. But if you needed him and you asked him questions and you were proper with the guy, he was good. And, you know, lots of guys just don't handle, you know, having cameras stuffed in their face very well. Some guy, you know, a lot of the guys from Canada have been media taught to be, say your cliches and get out of there and be like, oh, yeah, cool, got him, you know, like. A lot of guys just love to talk, and sometimes they have to get reined in by their team PR. You know, like you gotta turn a hose on them, be like, all right, that's enough. Don't give away all the secrets, please. You know, Robin Leonard.
Right.
You know, but but I think kicking a guy on the way out of town when he's been a 50 to 65 point player every year doesn't make a lot of sense. It, you know, it reeks of like the classic Boston thing where, you know, the Red Sox would trade a guy, then suddenly you'd hear all these shitty stories about the guy and be like, yeah, I'm glad he's gone. It's like, well, what are you dumping on the guy? Like, what did he do to you other than just play hard every day and be productive? And then you're just taking a shit on the guy. Like, happened to Nomar, happened to Manny Ramirez, you know, happened to Wade Boggs. Boggs had some other issues there, and so did Clemens, but like, all these guys got dumped on. But, you know, to kick a guy on his way out of town, and I'm waiting to see it to happen to Jack too. You know, I'm waiting for
it's
some people's stories to get out. And
yep,
because I mean, it sure seems like the Sabres have been trying to get him to wear the black hat, and he hasn't bid on it once. yet. I mean, maybe he will. I don't know. But I mean, in Sam's case, I don't know. I just didn't see much point in just being shitty about him, because he's a damn good player. And anytime there's been some kind of criticism of him, whether it was he's soft, he doesn't like to go to the net. Well, he turned things around by being a guy that parked his ass in front of the net and became a guy who distracted goalies, got tips in front, and was able to be really good around there. You know, it's like, oh, he doesn't go into the corners and fish pucks out. Yes, he does. Oh, he's pretty soft defensively. No, it's not the case. You know, all these things that, you know, people were critical, even the part about, you know, oh, he's not a center anymore, which, hey, I'm guilty of saying that, you know, because he was so good on the right wing. Well, he went out and proved to everybody this year. He's like, no, I can play center and be really good at it. It's just, you know, every coach before him was just like, yeah, I don't think so. This isn't going to work. So, you know, to me, he's the guy that's just thrived on proving everybody wrong. And, you know, for a guy of his talent level, he shouldn't have to do that, but he's had to. And now he's going to go to Florida. He's going to be in a top six role, whether he's a center or a winger. I don't think it matters. And he's going to get 4 or 5 cracks against the Sabres this year and maybe every year for the next however, if they extend him. And you know what? I think there's going to be a lot of fans that are going to be like, good, show him. Show him what's up. You know, get 3 points against him every game. Fine. Show him what happened. Show him what's wrong.
Yeah, I think he's a very underappreciated player, and I think his best hockey is actually still to come. And yeah. I think people, whether it's media or some fans that kind of wanted to run the guy out of town, I think they're going to understand that, yo, this guy's the goods, man. He's the shit. He's very legit. Let's talk Eichel for a sec, because, I mean, this has been the most
obvious. We might need a few more seconds. We might need a few more things and seconds for him.
But. You're probably right. But, I mean, look, lots of rumors going on forever. I mean, we didn't tape an episode over these last couple months where we didn't at least mention some rumors that we would be hearing, whether it was 31 thoughts or, you know, just all kinds of stuff going on. But anyway, lots of rumors, but nothing came yet. Nothing came about as of yet. And there's reports out there that Kevin Adams, which does seem logical, that the asking price right now is just too damn high, man. I mean, what are your thoughts on him still being here? At least, again, as we record this late into Monday night for a Tuesday morning drop, just your thoughts on him still being here. Are you surprised? And, I mean, I don't want to ask you how you see this played out, because we all know that at some point he's going to get traded. So let's just start there. Like, are you shocked right now that as we tape this podcast, Jack Eichel is still a Saber?
I'm pretty surprised. I thought the pressure point of the first round of the draft was going to be a big one as far as the Sabres were concerned, as far as getting, you know, getting the return that they're looking for. Because I was very sold on the fact that I figured they wanted another pick in the top 5. Or the top 10 at least, and to be able to get your pick of whatever you get from whoever trades for him. I figured that was as good as done, and I was wrong, which is why I don't get into gambling so much, because I would lose a lot of money.
Well, to be fair, everybody was wrong for the most part. Yeah, everyone. Yeah. So not just you.
Yeah. But it's, but given the way some of the discussion has gone, since the draft has ended and before free agency kicks up on Wednesday, way a lot of the conversation has gone is that teams that were interested early backed out, then they were back in again. And some teams that weren't in at first, they were in, then they got in, then they backed out, and then maybe they're in again. You're starting to hear things like, you know, the Rangers package isn't good enough. You know, I think it was Rick Carpinello said the Rangers didn't want to give up Lundqvist. Not Henrik Lundqvist. They have a defensive prospect named Lundqvist. And Brandon Schneider, who I think is Matthew Schneider's kid. So, yeah, more legacy stuff there. But they didn't want to give up those two guys. And I'm thinking, I'm pretty sure the Sabres weren't asking for him anyways. I'm pretty sure the Sabres would be asking for somebody a little bit higher up the ladder, maybe Kaapo Kakko or even Alexis Lafreniere, which I don't think the Rangers would give him up. But I think if you're offering up your third and fourth best prospects for Eichel, you're not getting a deal done. But that's where, you know, I think Elliott had the team list as what? LA, Anaheim, Calgary, Minnesota, Montreal supposedly kicked the tires. But, you know, again, that's, you know, unless they're giving up Nick Suzuki as part of that, it ain't happening. And Montreal's not giving up Nick Suzuki. So that's a non-starter for me, but some of these other teams that are interested, I mean, this is going to be a complex deal no matter what. Like it's complex in what teams are willing to give up. It's complex in, you know, Jack's status, which, you know, apparently he's skating, things are going good. The neck thing is still there, but he's working out and doing all that stuff. So there's that. And, you know, it all depends on what, you know, what level of action which we I think I read from Vogel that Terry Pegula is getting involved in this by saying, you know, I want him in the Western Conference, which I mean, yeah, that's what you should do, but like keep Terry the hell out of the room, man. Like he's the one that wants, I'm sure he's the one that's like sick of Jack now. And he doesn't want to be paying him $10 million a year anymore, considering the way Jack's been very passive aggressively been saying like, you guys stink. I don't like your medical staff. Please get me out of here. You know, without saying that directly. So, I mean, you know, having all of these factors involved, and it sure seemed that like the way the draft went and the way the first two trades went, Terry and Kim had nothing to do, nothing really going on other than, you know, giving the rubber stamp, like, go ahead, make that deal. We trust you. That they're getting involved with Jack discussions now makes me think, oh boy, this is going to get ugly because we know Terry isn't the most patient guy in the world. And I still firmly believe that his fingerprints are all over the O'Reilly trade, which went sideways for X number of reasons. So, you know, if I'm Kevin, I'm just changing the lock to my office door every couple of days. And maybe he's just saying, you know, pretending you're not in the office when you're on the phone with some of these other teams. But I don't, you know, listen, he's going to get dealt. And it's a surprise he's still on the team, but it's going to happen. And it's probably, I mean, going to get bit on this again, but it's probably coming this week.
If you love listening to What's Here on Talk of Buffalo podcast, what's stopping you from grabbing a mic and starting your own show? There's no better place to host than Blue Wire Hustle. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and you just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all the other listening platforms out there. And here's the best part. You can get all this for just $15 a month. The same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So, if you're ready to do more than just listen to us talk about your favorite team, then make your voice heard in Hustle. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box in the show notes of this episode to find out more. But again, that's bwhustle.com/join. You said something earlier that kind of caught my interest where it's almost like Kevin Adams, or maybe it's Terry, whoever, that they almost want Jack to be the bad guy, to wear the black hat in this. They need to be careful though, don't they? Because look, I mean, you were just very clear, because I was going to ask you after the break, is there any chance whatsoever that you see Jack Eichel opening night in the Sabres lineup and maybe gets dealt during the season? But you kind of made that clear. You don't think that's going to happen. I certainly don't think that's going to happen either. But do you have to be careful like how this is handled? Because one thing that maybe some fans don't think about, at least some, is the way things are handled. It reverberates. How things go behind the scenes kind of reverberates around the league with players. And if you want guys to come here, you know, free agents to come here, mm-hmm. and you're handling things bad and you're throwing your star center under the bus a little bit and you're trying to make him look like the bad guy, I mean, you kind of have some experience, you know, I mean, you know, players and stuff like this. Don't you think that could negatively affect their ability? Not that they're, you know, also affecting their ability to attract free agents as being a shitty team for 10 straight years and counting. But beyond that, I know from, you know, at least knowing some Bills players and kind of covering at least a little bit that team during that time and knowing some players, that does matter. What other players think matters to guys around the league when they're trying to get them to come join their team. Do you think that this is something that Kevin Adams, I mean, he wants Jack gone, obviously, but maybe they kind of need to be a little bit tender and like get the deal done, but don't make Jack look like the asshole, because I feel like that could really backfire. Not especially with fans, but also, like I said, players from other teams around the league. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, no, word definitely gets out. Like, guys know where different situations sit. when it comes down to it. And they, you know, everybody talks. Like, that's, you want to act like nobody talks. Everybody talks. To say, like, it happens in every business. Like, you know, like same thing will happen in media. Like, you know, if there's a media job up there and people think like, oh, well, you know, I don't have to call that person back because I already got my pick settled. I'll get back to them once we get it announced. We'll get that all square. Well, I gotta tell you, we knew about it way, you know, right after you decided to pick the person you hired, because chances are we all know who's going for those jobs. And it's the same way in the NHL with free agency. Like, you know where guys are ideally probably want to play. I can only think of one situation ever in my mind where a guy got really pissed about free agency. And this goes way back. And it goes back to Rafael Palmeiro and Will Clark. We're talking back what, late 80s, I think, when Will Clark mm-hmm. signed with the Rangers and Palmeiro was with the Rangers. Those guys played college ball together, and Palmeiro was pissed. He was pissed beyond belief that he got stabbed in the back by his buddy. And instead, Palmeiro ended up going to Baltimore after that. And he was just like, you know, screw Will Clark. I mean, that's an ancient reference, but like, that's the one time I can think where right. guys weren't on the same page. But like, players know. Players already know that it's a mess in Buffalo. They already know that the ownership in Ottawa is dirt cheap. They already know about, you know, it's a shit show in Edmonton. Like, they already know about all this stuff. It's not a secret. And, you know, if you're signing with Buffalo and not going into it knowing what you're going to be possibly dealing with, I want to know where you've been hiding, because that's an amazing way to shelter yourself from everything going on out there. But the way, and I've always referred to this as a passive aggressive war of words between Adams and Eichel's representation, because this week, you know, Adams is asked straight out, like, you know, are you okay with having, you know, if Jack's still on your roster come training camp, are you okay with that? And he goes, yeah, I'm very happy. I'd be very happy to have him on the roster. Why? We know it's a lie, but that's a lie. You know, I'd be very happy to have him. But it's his way of trying to leverage things through the media to be like, yeah, no, we don't have to. We're not forced to trade him. Fine. Like, you got to say that. But you know, when you get a comment from Peter Fish, you know, Jack's agent, saying we've been anticipating a trade all along here, you get caught in a lie. And if there's something we've seen from Jack this past year, he's good at catching Sabres executives in lies. Because it happened to yeah. Kruger, it yep. happened to Kruger, and now, you know, now Adams is kind of caught, you know, getting caught, you know, spinning a line to the media. I'm not going to say he's outright lying, because he's just, you know, that's part of the game. Like, you gotta show a face into it a little bit. But man, oh man, you can't say like, we're happy to have Jack here, then have Jack's agent say like, yeah, no, we've been waiting for him to get moved here. So like, you know, just sitting around, just waiting for the phone call. That's what we're doing. Like, we're not going back. Like, he's not going back, but we're not going to say we're asking for a trade, because the second he asks for a trade or he demands a trade, he's the bad guy. Because then it's just like, oh, he's given up on the team. He's, you know, he's just greedy. He just wants money, blah, blah, blah. People are saying that now, but it's kind of like, yeah, no, he's been trying all along. Like, you know, they haven't surrounded him with anybody. You can't blame the guy. But the second he demands a trade, the switch flips and now he's the bad guy. Because yeah. that resolves the Sabres can just say, well, we got to wash our hands of this now. Like, you know, hey, he wants out. That's the way it is. So we're just going to do, you know, we're going to do our best to get that taken care of. Instead, now it's this, you know, tete-a-tete between them where neither one's giving an inch to own up to making the bad, you know, to being the bad guy in this. And to me, it's hilarious, because I think Jack made his point very clear at the end of the year. This is really bad. I don't like how they're handling my next situation. It's my life. It's my career. I, you know, let me take care of myself. You know, I got to think about my future here, blah, blah, blah. Just regarding his health, like, never mind the team and all that. But just in the matter of staying healthy, he said, you know, listen, these guys don't want me to be healthy, which, that's a really shitty thing. If that's the case, if the team is just like, no, we don't want you to get this operation. No, we want you to be in pain for a long time. No, we don't want you to play at 100%. You know, it doesn't matter that he wants like some crazy operation or some, you know, very untested operation. I can't call it crazy, because what if it, you know, makes him into, you know, ultra superstar that never has to worry about his neck again? Then it's an amazing surgery. But all this stuff is just, it's hilarious. And to me, it's very funny to watch this go down and have neither one of them just own up to it and be like, yeah, no, fuck it, I'm the bad guy.
Right. Right. Well, I'll tell you what, I mean, maybe by the time we do Casual Friday, we'll have something concrete happen with Jack. Before I let you go, and I do want to wrap with a question about free agency, but before that, let's just really quickly here gloss over the first couple of picks of the draft. And again, this is almost old news now. You know, people are hearing this on Tuesday. I know you've been all over the place doing podcasts and radio appearances. I know you're on WGR too and stuff like that. Plenty of written literature about a lot of these picks already. But Owen Power, I mean, obviously no surprise. I mean, you talked about it on the show many times, and that was the expected number one pick. Are you kind of pleased that that's the direction they went with instead of maybe, you know, wingers and fours maybe was a bigger need organizationally, but they just went with what they thought was the best player. At the end of the day, I mean, this is probably a rhetorical question, but I'm assuming that you're happy with the direction that they went with that pick.
Yeah, I think Power was, I think when it came down to it, Power was the only pick they could really make at that spot. You could have gotten wacky with it and picked, you know, any one of five other players, but I think Power, no matter what, was the guy you had to go with, just based on everything about him. I mean, he, you know, kind of got to prove himself at world championships, being, you know, an 18-year-old playing against, you know, a bunch of men in that and playing a lot of minutes. He wasn't, you know, usually in those tournaments when you're 18 and playing in worlds, you're not getting a lot of ice time. He was, and he played, he handled himself very well. So that's, I mean, that's a good thing. So I don't think you have to worry about him. If he goes back to Michigan this year, they're probably going to win a title because they're loaded. Because the first two picks in the draft are Michigan bound. Four of the first five guys are
heading
to Michigan.
It's crazy.
It's nuts. Absolutely nuts. And I think it was seven. I think there was seven overall picks like that are going to Michigan.
How does that team ever lose a game?
Well, I mean, all these guys are going to be coming in as either freshmen or sophomores. So I mean, college hockey skews a bit older with the ages.
Yeah,
you get a lot of Canadians who play like junior A or junior B up until they're 20, until they age out of it, and then they're like, okay, time to go to college, and they show up at college and they're 20 years old and they're freshmen, and suddenly it's just like, oh, all right, they're bigger than every other freshman and they're the same size as all the juniors. Neat. So, you know, so there's that part of it. But like, that's also what makes college hockey the huge challenge it is. And that's why the numbers are a little bit depressed in there. They play fewer games, the whole thing. But I mean, Power's already shown himself to be very good as it is. And I think seeing him another year at Michigan is going to be really impressive, you know, with Matt Beniers, another, you know, with Portillo probably being the number one goalie, I think. But you know, it's Beniers, it's Luke Hughes, it's Kent Johnson, it's a bunch of these guys all going there at the same time, and it's nuts. Like that's nuts. So in that respect, it's great to see that. We talked a little bit about Isaac Rosen, solid guy in Sweden. You know, played at Leksand. Keep him there for another couple of years. Let him play it out. Let him see how it goes. And then the five Russians they took.
Yeah,
is bonkers. If anything showed me that they locked Terry out of the draft room this year, it was the fact they took a bunch of Russian players. But from what I understand, the Sabres' entire scouting staff, all seven of them, were all at the under 18 World Championships. I think it was under 18s, and Russia was there, and the Russian guys played really well. So I mean, they were able to get the attention of the Sabres guys, and they were able to get Terry to be like, hey man, listen, you're going to hear a lot of names you might not know or like, just trust us. This is going to be good. Like these guys will work good. But what I like the most was that these guys are skill guys. They're speed and skill guys, which my God, they've been trying to find the tweener step for a lot of guys as time has gone on in the lower rounds, finding guys that are just straight up skill players and that can finish and they can score. Holy shit, man. What a novel idea to do that. And it just, you know, it just happens that, you know, a pile of them are Russians, but like, that's fine. Like you can do that. But there's the one pick that they made, I think is going to be a real sleeper, is Alexander Kisikov. I think he's going to be he's a higher end talent that they were able to get in the lower end of the second, 53rd, second round. I think he's going to be a really nice player. And I'm going down my list here just to see who else. Going down here quick. Nope, that's not the one.
I was shocked to see that. Man. I was shocked to see the Russians picked, and not in a bad way. I mean, that's not a complaint. That's a that's a pleasant surprise. Just as the Sabres, that's not something they typically do often.
Yeah. And I think the defenseman they got late from Russia, Nikita Novikov, he might be interesting as well. So, they got what, 12 guys this year? You want to rebuild your pipeline up. That's a good way to do it. And, people dumped all over this draft year because they don't think it's that deep. We'll see. We'll see what happens. And honestly, they've needed forwards in the pipeline for the longest time. They've just been tapped out of it. You can see it in Rochester with the lineups they've put out. I mean, last year you can't really judge it because it was half an ECHL roster, but they've needed forwards for a bit. So that, I mean, this is good. They're ideally going to have a ton of picks next year, which will help out. They'll be able to pack up, pack in some more people, get some more on-hand scouting and go from there. But I'm just on the face of it, I'm impressed that they went with skill and speed. They didn't worry about size. They didn't worry about, trying to find bruisers and maulers out there. They went for some really skilled guys. I think one of their picks is like 6'1", 150. Like, I mean, I don't know that I've ever been 6'1", 150 ever in my life. So, so I mean, like you see him and you're just like, geez, that guy's going to put him away. Well, he will. He's 18. Give him some time. Let him play in Russia. Let him just get it sorted out and come over. Ideally come over when things are ready to go.
Last thing, and then I'll let you go, Joe. So, all right. We've talked about Rasmus. He's gone. We've talked about Sam. He's gone. Jack's departure, certainly imminent at this point, for sure. They got back a goalie prospect and maybe a third-line defenseman, I suppose, for this year. For this team, anyway, he'll probably be a third-line defenseman this year. Two draft picks, two first-round, I should say, picks next year of their own in Florida's for sure. And obviously, I mean, regardless of where Jack goes and what the haul ends up being, I'd be stunned if it's not a first round draft pick next year too. So you're probably looking at three first round picks at least next year for Buffalo going forward. Now, Kevin Adams alluded to the fact, if not flat out said, I don't want to quote him directly if he didn't say this, but I read that he did. He basically said that he's not really looking to sign anyone in free agency that could take a lot of minutes away from his younger core. He wants those guys to develop, and instead he'll fill out the roster with veterans and veteran leaders, and God, all I could just hope is that he's not referring to guys like Ryder and Riley Sheenan, players like that. But anyway, I guess here's a question that I wanted to ask you on this. Given what he said, given the fact that they're about to lose three star players and really get nothing immediate back, and that they're not going to be active in free agency, and they don't have chips right now to really trade and get a really good player probably right now. I can't believe I got to ask you this, but are we about to enter another season of Buffalo Sabres tanking? I mean, really?
What I think is going to be the debate this year, and it's probably going to make everybody sick to their stomach, is what's the right way to find your way to the bottom? Because the Sabres were beyond criticized for doing it the way they did. And certainly Arizona was too. This time around, though, they're going about it in a more Maple Leafs way. The year the Maple Leafs got Austin Matthews in the draft, where they had things started going wrong, and they fired Randy Carlyle, had his assistant take over. They didn't have a ton of guys really to trade. Anyways, they just had a bad team, got rid of a couple of guys, and then just were bad. And I don't think there's any way you can look at what the Sabres are going to throw out there on opening night and say, yeah, this is a bad team. I don't think you can look at them and say, like, I think they got a shot. No, they're flat out going to be bad. They're not, I'm of the opinion you can't actively tank if you're already going to be bad. That's the way I look at it. I don't know if that's semantics or what have you, but if you can't tell already that they're starting over, I don't know what to tell you. I know that there's still some fans that are holding out hope that, that either Jack will decide, yeah, I want to play here, or that the Sabres will just, if they can't get a deal done or get the deal they want, just tell Jack to sit out for the whole year. No, that has less of a chance of happening than Jack playing for them this year. So, let's not beat around the bush here. They're going to be bad. The thing that's going to catch up with them though, is that Detroit's also going to be bad and is going to be in their division. Ottawa should be better, but maybe they'll also still be bad again. And they're in their division. You know, Columbus is probably going to be bad. They're also in the East. So you've got other teams around just the Eastern Conference where they're going to get points, they're going to get wins, and that's going to drive fans nuts because they're obviously going to want to end up, you know, being as close to bad as possible. But like half the Pacific Division is going to be bad. You know, this isn't quite like how Major League Baseball is, where you have like five teams that are trying to win and everybody else being like, yeah, we can pare it down and hope for the number one pick. This is different. Like this is teams managing stuff in a flat cap era, coming off years where every team lost money. This past lost a lot of money. And I think that's what we're kind of seeing here. The Sabres are looking at it from the view of, why are we going to break our backs spending a ton of money if we're just going to be bad anyways? Like, let's just, you know, sort of strip it down, get all the futures that we can handle for these three guys that we know we can trade for good stuff and go from there and not spend a ton of money to do it. Because as it is right now, once they trade Jack, if they don't take a huge contract on hand, they're either barely at the floor or they're under it, which is, yeah. I think was everybody's fear when Terry, you know, when the assumption was last year that they were going to cut down the payroll to, I think, like 70 million. People were like, oh my God, no. And like, they might be 60 million this year at this rate. So, I mean, it's not what fans want to hear, but I think once you see there's no Jack, there's no Sam, there's no Ristolainen, you know, Victor Olofsson's now your top offensive player, probably him and Cousins are probably your top offensive players, and Skinner, I mean, we'll see if he bounces back. And your number one defenseman is Rasmus Dahlin. It's a young ass team. It's a really young team, and young teams don't usually do that well. And that's just the way it's going to be. And we don't even still even know who their goalie is going to be. So this is going to be, it's going to be a tough year, but I think as long as the fans know that going in and they play interesting, fun hockey, which certainly sounded like the way Don Granato wants to coach them. As long as they do those things, they can win people back. Because if they play an exciting style of hockey and maybe wins, you know, play really hard, you know, don't get their heads handed to them every night and don't, you know, mope all season, fans will respect it. And I think and this is where the Pagoules may be pushing their luck here. They're counting on that to happen. That fans will be like, hey, you know what? Good for them. They're trying hard, whatever. It's ballsy, and it's tough to do that after 10 straight years of missing the playoffs and setting yourself up for 11 or 12. But I mean, what else are you going to do here? Like, yeah, I mean, you could have a poisonous locker room with Jack and Sam and Risto, and then try to build up around them and try to figure out a way to get it done right and have it continue to be bad and have the whole locker room be sour. Or you can do it this way. Hit the reset button. Say you've already got a couple of good parts in place with Cousins and with Dahlin, and just move on. And I think they decided that's the right way to go about this, because doing it the other way was proving fruitless regardless.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, we got some good topics, I think, to pick back up on this on our casual Friday episode. We'll talk. We'll see what's going on with Jack. Maybe there'll be some news. Maybe there won't be. We'll also talk. Free agency does start Wednesday, so I don't expect them to be fancy names, but I expect the Sabres to at least probably have a couple of new additions by the time we tape, at least maybe. And then one thing which I really wanted to focus on, and I want to save this for Friday, is you talked about the young guys, and you know they're going to go through some learning pains this year. I'm going to ask you on Friday, and we're going to dive in this at least a little bit anyway. If playing these guys like Cousins and Mittelstadt, who were starting to come along nice last year, if giving them too much of a bigger role right away next year, you know, top six guys playing, you know, big minutes against the other team's top lines, maybe that might be counterproductive. So I'm going to get your thoughts on that and some things that they might be able to do to kind of navigate around. But we'll save that for Friday. We'll talk. We'll do a new starting five. I'll recap you kicking my ass for what, five straight weeks. Now, you know what? I'm going to come up. Honestly, I don't know what topic we're doing yet, but I am going to come. I'm going to cheat. At this point, I'm coming up with one that's like slanted towards me. I don't even know what the hell it's going to be, but I got to figure out something where I could beat you, because this is getting really embarrassing. And by the way, it wasn't
close. The best Toto songs in history, I would be clueless on.
But we'll talk about that on Friday. Thanks as always for joining me, Joe.
Hey, you got it, man.
All All right, boys and girls, that is going to do it for another episode. Big thank you one more time, my man, Joe Yurden. Make sure you're following him on Twitter, at Joe Yurden, one of my favorite guests. Always a pleasure to have Joe on the show. So thank you very much. And by the way, of course, like I said earlier at the beginning, he will be back for Casual Friday, Marcel Louis Jacques Imperial Pizza on Wednesday, Barry McCockiner on Thursday. Lots of stuff going on here at Talk of Buffalo Podcast. And if you have not yet subscribed, please go ahead and do that right now. Subscribe either on Apple or Spotify. We're typically on all the platforms out there, but for whatever reason, we're having significant issues with Google and a couple other ones out there, Stitcher. So if you can, make sure you subscribe on Apple or Spotify. Then new episodes will get directly sent right to your phone or whatever listening device you have, literally as soon as they are dropped. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter, @PeverinTweets. I'm always on Twitter, podcast polls, upcoming guest promos, sports talk, you name it. I'm on Twitter like pretty much 24/7. So check me out there. Thank you so, so much for listening. I say it all the time, man. I truly, honest to God, man, I appreciate each and every single one of you. So many great shows out there. And when you're choosing to lock into this one for whatever period of time, I'm humbled by that. I'm grateful. So thank you very, very much. And again, I'll be back. In fact, I'll be back tomorrow. Final Wings Club episode for sure with Marcel Louis Jacques from ESPN.com. Talk to you tomorrow.